The Day and the Queso, it is my privilege to welcome Odilia Romero and Janet Martinez, co-founders of Cielo, Comunidades Indígenas en Liderazgo, a nonprofit organization based in Los Angeles, focused on assisting the indigenous immigrant community living in the area. One of the biggest barriers for this community is language, as there are so many different indigenous languages spoken in Mexico, and very few of the people living in Los Angeles actually have resources in their languages. Cielo is instrumental in getting that information to them, along with other resources that may be needed, especially during these COVID times that we are living in. To learn more about Cielo and all the work that they do, and find out how you may help or volunteer, visit mycielo.org. It's also pretty exciting that this year, El Grito Los Angeles will be taking place virtually. And Councilwoman Monica Rodriguez has invited Cielo to be part of the festivities by hosting a telethon benefiting Cielo and the work that they do with undocumented indigenous people in the community. The telethon will feature live performances by groups such as Los Tucanes de Tijuana, Oso Motley, Conjunto Nueva Ola, the Santa Cecilia, and many others. To take part of the telethon and to enjoy the live music and entertainment, visit elgrito2020.com and see how you can be part of this great event this year. It was really exciting to speak to Odilia and Janet about Cielo and the work that they do. I hope you glean as much as I did from my conversation with them here on the Queso. Thanks so much for joining me. Janet and Odilia, thank you so much for joining me.
Of course. Yeah. Thank you for the invite.
So I'm looking forward to watching all the way from Chicago, watching the telethon that's taking place on the 15th with El Grito in Los Angeles, which Cielo, the organization that you work with, I understand is going to benefit from that, correct?
Correct, correct. We'll be receiving donations, yes.
Okay, so I wanted to find out a little bit more about the organization, about how it started. I know you two are co-founders, is that correct?
Yes.
Yeah.
We're both co-founders, yeah.
So how long have you been around? How long has Cielo been around, and how did it come about? What prompted you to do this?
So originally we were in an organization called the Frente Indígena de Organizaciones Nacionales, called the FIOB. It's a binational indigenous organization that does human rights work. And we had organized with them for the past 15 years. So then we started, once we realized that the support for indigenous women leaders was not in a tangible form, we decided to found our own organization, which is Cielo, which is indigenous women led, and it's also located here in LA. So we decided to start the organization because we did see that we wanted to, one, support indigenous women leadership, and two, have kind of sustainable long-term solutions for some of the cultural linguistic barriers that indigenous people face here in Los Angeles.
So when you say it was not tangible for women, what did it look like back then?
Go ahead. Well, the Frente has done a lot of work towards women's rights, but it still needs a lot of work, like a lot of organization, right? Like we live in a society that is male dominated in a lot of positions. And, you know, we wanted to create something different, kind of pave a road for future generations to be uplifted, especially women's work and women's leadership.
Mm-hmm. So what kind of strides have you seen since you started in that arena as far as seeing more women leaders?
Well, we started our activism about 20 years ago with the FIOB, and the fact that I'm now elected, the first woman to be elected after 28 years of the founding of the FIOB,
as the first binational Zapotec woman to lead the organization, it's one of the outcomes of the struggle of many women in the Frente from the beginning, right? But we needed more. We needed seeing like the displacement of indigenous people, the people that get most impacted are women. So we needed to create a woman-led organization that would understand from a woman's point of view what are the women facing as they are pushed to migrate to the United States.
So I see one of the areas of your organization is to help undocumented indigenous people, correct? What would you say would be the main difference between, you know, an undocumented person versus an undocumented indigenous person? What is the main difference or challenge that you find, aside from the language barrier, of course?
Well, I think the language barrier is something that we cannot help but emphasize. We've done a survey on the Undocumented Indigenous Fund, the fund that we created, and we've seen that in LA, there is at least 15 different languages present that our preferred languages for indigenous people. And I think that we can't minimize the difference that makes in somebody's life, right? Just accessing healthcare, accessing the court systems and stuff like this. Like if your preferred language isn't English or Spanish, there's no resources for that, right? The lack of interpretation is a huge, huge barrier that we've seen for a lot of indigenous people. Would you like to elaborate?
Well, I think, as far as Cielo is concerned, language rights is a human right, right? So we cannot minimize it because as people migrate, undocumented or not, if Spanish or English, the two dominant languages, is not your first language, you will not be able to support your children in school. If the children keep speaking another language, they will fall behind forever if there's not support, if there's not an interpreter for them to guide them how to navigate the U.S. school system, right? So that's one. But also the racism of other Mexican and other Latinos towards indigenous people is something that we constantly have to be educating our allies, our Mexican and Latino relatives, about their comments like no seas indio. People use it all the time in their homes, right? So that's a very common saying in Latinx's household. So we're educating about that too. So there are a few, many layers, one being the language barrier, the cultural barrier, and the institutional racism and the discrimination of other Latinos towards indigenous people.
So talk about that a little bit, maybe for some of the listeners who might not be aware, especially if they're not from a Mexican home where you say it is pretty common for there to be that racism. What other examples do you see maybe in the schools, or have you been able to do anything like that in the schools for children who experience that?
You're in Chicago, right?
Yes.
Well, there's a large population of Mayans from Guatemala and Chicago, and there's a large population of Purépechas from Michoacán in Chicago, and they face the same issues of other Latinos, other Mexicans, of racism and discrimination, just like we do in LA, or just like we do in New York, or just like we do in Oregon. When people migrate, they migrate with their racism and discrimination towards indigenous people, be it from South America, be it from Central America, be it from Mexico, there is always this prejudice against indigenous people. No matter where you go, and I've been to Chicago many times, actually we had a training in Chicago for indigenous interpreters, and all of them came back saying, when we go to the courts, the Spanish-English interpreter, non-indigenous, will humiliate us, will not acknowledge that we are interpreters. You know, they would ask us like, why are you here? Why can't you learn Spanish? Why can't you learn English? And mind you, some of them were trilingual. So no matter where we go, there is that racism there.
Yes, and you know, unfortunately, we saw a lot of that racism coming out of Mexico. Was it like last year when the movie came out that we had a Mexican actress who was, I believe, from an indigenous population. Her name escapes me at the moment. But
Yalitza.
Yes, Yalitza. And so it was unfortunate to see some of these big name Mexican actors and you know, people in the industry belittling her. You know, there seemed to be people outside of the Mexican community embracing her work more than her own people. And so that must be some challenge, you know, a challenge for you as you work with the communities there in Los Angeles and, like you said, around the country, just educating our own people on how not to be so racist and be so open-minded, especially in this climate that we're facing today of so much division. You would think that we would come together more. Do you find that's happening more, or is it still the same thing?
Well, I think one thing that he has to be clear is that we cannot generalize everybody, right? You'll find some good Mexican allies. You'll also find some good white allies, some good black allies. And you could also find some not such a good ally as an indigenous person, right? So you could find a good allies in the Chicano world, but, you know, a large population of all these sectors are racist towards indigenous people, because the indigenous person that is able to dance the folklore is very welcome. But when it comes to our rights, then we're no longer welcome when we demand our rights as indigenous people, when we demand that we're treated as humans, then that right doesn't apply, right? Mm-hmm. So if you, oh yeah, que bonita tu blusa, is it Oaxacan, let me touch you, that's very common. But when I say, like, I need an interpreter and I have rights, they pretend to, they look away, you know? So it's like this sense of, we want the dancing indigenous people, but we don't want them demanding the right. We don't want to acknowledge that our communities are right now picking your fruits, your vegetables in rural California, right? In the restaurant industry in Chicago, in the restaurant industry in New York, in Los Angeles. A large population of the workers are indigenous people, but we don't want to acknowledge that. We want to acknowledge that Indian that dances, the one with the feathers, the one that does the dance Azteca, right? People love that, but they do not want to acknowledge. It's not that they don't know that we exist. They do not want to acknowledge our existence.
Just not wanting to go any deeper than the beautiful colors and the cultural, you know, nice feelings that people kind of get from that. But there's so much more. And as well as with Cielo, I was looking at some of the programs that you have that have to do with literature and just conserving the language. Do you have students that just want to learn the different languages who maybe want to interact with these communities more? Do you offer those types of programs?
Well, we have a literature conference, which is open to the public. We do it every year. Unfortunately, because of COVID, we weren't able to this year, where we bring together different indigenous people that write, that are idea creators, that are coming to share with their communities, because there's a lot of indigenous communities here. So we try to bring the different people that write in languages that are prevalent in Los Angeles, and we bring them together here to have these conversations with community members, because it's an open space, it's open to the public, it's in the public library, so anybody can come. And I think that that's really why we did it. We wanted to have a community organized indigenous literature conference for indigenous communities. And what we're seeing is that a lot of the new generation of indigenous, like first, second generation, are coming back and wanting to learn their parents' language, because there is language loss. We're seeing that there is a language loss. At least for me, like, my parents didn't teach me Zapotec, right? And that's in one generation that can get lost. And they're trilingual. Both of them are trilingual. They speak Spanish, English, and Zapoteco. But somehow, like, just all the prejudice and the shame that people have made them feel, like, doesn't allow them to transmit it because of trauma, you know what I mean? Like, the trauma that people live in their everyday life. So we're seeing language loss, but we're also seeing young people wanting to pick up and learn the languages that their parents might not have taught them at home.
And the same for Interpreters Conference, what is that about?
So for the Indigenous Interpreters Conference, we bring together different interpreters that interpret all over the United States. Mm-hmm. And we've seen that as Cielo, what we can share is the knowledge that we've gained from many years of working interpretation. and starting new cohorts all over the country, because we know, as Olivia mentioned, there are indigenous people in New York, there's indigenous people in Chicago. We can't just build here in Los Angeles and then fly those interpreters out. Instead, our model is to create new cohorts of different indigenous interpreters in New York. We've had trainings in New York, in Washington, D.C., in L.A., also in Baja California, so that we could address the need that we're seeing of indigenous interpreters all over the country. So for the interpreter conference, we bring everybody together that we've trained so that they can network, but also as continuing education for the indigenous interpreters, because we know that those services are also, or those opportunities are really limited, because simply there's not a lot of, focus on indigenous interpretation as in Spanish and English, right?
So if someone wanted to become an indigenous interpreter, where would they start?
Well, they will have to start by speaking that language fluently. This is not where we teach you to become an interpreter and teach you the language.
I see. So yeah, where would someone learn the language?
Well, the language is like Spanish. You are born with it. You live with it. You develop with it. You grow up with it. Mm-hmm. So as they would say in Spanish, no? El Zapoteco se mama. You from the day that you're born, you are conceived in this language. Mm-hmm. So you just some people learn it, but we don't teach the language. We are working with people that grew up speaking the language. They were born speaking the language. That the language is part of their daily life. Because becoming an interpreter is like if I was asking you, well, you have two hands. Can you play Mozart for me right now? Well, that's not gonna happen, right? So it's a trained skill that you have, but not only that, you have to know the music tones to play Mozart, right? You have to have years of practice as a pianist. So same thing with the language, you have to be born with it. You have to be able to transmit indigenous world to Western world and vice versa.
So is there anywhere in the country where someone can go and just learn it from scratch? If you were not born with it?
Well, I mean, there are 68 indigenous languages just in Mexico, and I think another 23 in Guatemala. So it would be figuring out, I guess, what language you want to learn.
I see.
And also that there's 68 indigenous languages, but each one of them have their variants. So there's 364 languages spoken in Mexico. Which one do you learn? Whoa. Do you want to learn Nahuatl from Guerrero? Then I suggest you go to Guerrero and learn it from there. You want to learn my Zapoteco, then go to my pueblo and learn it there, right? And because there aren't that many classes here, and some of the classes that there are is the community trying to teach their children how to speak the language.
So it really sounds like an urgent matter to conserve these languages, to conserve these within the families, and then hopefully have it branch out into, you know, communities as far as, you know, having more people learning it, getting into the interpretation world, so that people's rights are defended, like you said, in courts, in medical facilities. I imagine right now with COVID, it's been probably difficult for these communities to get by and get resources. Where do you come in as far as that, the COVID pandemic and helping these communities?
So on our website, we developed some videos on the COVID and preventative measures. We did this maybe a few months ago, right when the pandemic was starting. So a lot of the information was not concise then, you know. First it was, wear the mask, don't wear the mask, wear the mask. No, yes, now we have to wear the mask, you know, and forest fires in California. And
oh, wow.
So, you know, we have the forest fires right now in California. So that's like another layer of the mask. But so we developed these videos in 12 indigenous languages on preventative measures for COVID-19, like, you know, what was the script?
Oh, the script was like, you know, there's a new illness in the world that is called COVID-19. So in order for you to spread it or to get it, you need to wear, you know, these are the symptoms, you know. So we describe the symptoms and then wear the mask. If you feel these, you know, you can't breathe, then you have to go to a doctor. That was the original script, but it's been changing now with, you have to wear the mask all the time, mm-hmm. You know, no gatherings. So as the world learns about COVID, we're learning too and adjusting to whatever we need to adjust in order to inform our to inform indigenous communities on the prevention of COVID and the resources out there. And well, of course, Cielo has raised $967,000 to support undocumented indigenous families in the Los Angeles area. So we're really excited. And now with the Grito, I'm thinking we're getting to the $2 million. So that is, that's going to be great. But with that, we're only going to help 5,000 families.
Right.
Right.
So in the LA area, how many families do you believe that there are there?
We don't know exactly. There's no hardcore numbers because we are labeled as Mexicans and Latinos. So we go under that label. But according to the Mexican Exterior Affairs Office, there's about 2 million indigenous people, mainly from the state of Guerrero, Oaxaca, and Chiapas throughout the United States, and with the majority being in California. But exact numbers, we don't have.
I see, yeah, and I can only imagine how much work you have to keep your website and your resources updated. I commend you for that, because on top of everything else, you're updating those videos and you're updating the information for these communities. I'm sure they look at you as a resource for so many things, first of all, before anything else. So, I mean, that's just great that you're there for that. Now, the Councilwoman Monica Rodriguez, she's the person leading the Grito this year? Is that correct?
Yes, her office approached us that she was going to do this fundraiser for us. We're very grateful for her solidarity with indigenous people. And, you know, her district has a lot of people from the Chinantec region. So we're really excited that she's supporting her constituents.
Yeah.
Now, is there one fund specifically that the funds will go to from this year's Grito event, or is just in general for all your programming?
This is specifically for the undocumented indigenous fund, and that goes into a separate account. Okay. So there's transparency of how much we're going to raise and how many families we're going to help. So we're really excited. We got our first donation yesterday of $25.
Oh, great.
So, yeah. So it was really happy to see like the online platform that they created, because we've been very fortunate that they've been in charge of everything. They're doing all like arranging the concert, getting the celebrities on board, you know, working with the accountants, attorneys, and we're really excited because our plate is full already. We also have a food distribution. Wow. We're continuing to train interpreters online. We have a program that provides, is it therapy?
Yeah. Therapy for the indigenous interpreters. We're also providing PPE material and the food bank that she mentioned every week.
Oh, wow. So food bank is from just donations, people who come in and say, I want to donate some food to the food bank?
No, we partner with a few organizations here in LA, and they were able to provide food boxes for indigenous communities. And we're now restructuring the program because we see that COVID's not going anywhere within the next 2-3 years. So we need to prepare, like, how are we going to...
Long-term.
you know, how are we going to provide food for the next year, 2 years to indigenous communities? So we're now working also with the office of Monica Rodriguez and see how she could connect us to the local pantries in Los Angeles and see how we could, you know, keep this in a long-term... Hopefully we'll get a truck to go pick up the food, and then they could just come and pick it up. So we have big dreams here.
It's good to put your dreams out in the open, because then people know what you need. And I'm glad that you're mentioning specific items. And I'm so happy that the councilwoman is helping you so much. You mentioned the website that they set up specifically for this. Other than the Grito website, what website would that be?
I think it's Give Lively.
Give Lively El Grito 2020, so people could donate there. I mean, they have like from $20 to $25, $100, but people could donate $1, $2, right? So that it has different options, because every penny adds up.
I thought, you know, this is really, really clever, really, you know, nice way to do the Grito, being that we can't be there in person. but make it a Teleton, you know, online, and people have, feel like they're participating. And participating is something so important. Like, these Indigenous families will surely benefit from these, you know, these donations. How do you foresee these funds? I mean, it's basically kind of like the a relief fund, temporary fix for now, right? Because many people are out of work.
So the fund, how it's worked currently, is that we've given checks to the recipients, mm-hmm. and we just give them to each person in the amount of $400. So far, we've placed the $770,000, wow. approximately, and we've helped around 1,900 families from my last count. And we're still working our way through the money, because we had to, now with COVID being so widely spread in Los Angeles, there was an increase during the time we were doing the fund, we had to start mailing stuff. And that was, before they used to be able to pick it up, but with everything incrementing, we were just like, it would just be safer to mail everything to everybody's house. But obviously, like, that adds an element to our workload too, because then you have to verify addresses so that you don't have everything coming back and so that it doesn't delay. So we've been working our way through the money.
Yeah.
So we're excited to be able to help so many families.
Yeah, it's a total of $771,200. I went to look at your post.
I know. That's why I was like 770. And that's why I said approximately.
You know? And that's great. You know, and to some people out there listening, they might say, well, $400, you know, for some people spend that in a meal, you know, out in Los Angeles in a night. But what a difference it can make to a family in need. You know, people really, I think, somos bien lutistas. Like, we try to find a way to use every dollar in a positive, we like to stretch the dollar, right? So I imagine these families are so grateful for what you're doing.
Well, yesterday, one of the ladies said, well, this food distribution has saved entire families, because a check that we got from Cielo, we paid towards the rent. Wow. Because we have a huge rent bill.
Yeah, there were some people that I talked to that have said, hey, my rent bill, I haven't paid my rent in 5 months and I'm using the check to pay it off. Yikes. You know, little by little, like the amount that I owe.
And she was saying, like, I have kids and we didn't foresee this coming. So, you know, whatever vegetables I get, last week there were like some, I don't know the name of the chilies, but I don't want to be racist by calling them a certain chili that a certain community uses. But she's like, my cousin works in the Korean community. She's a housekeeper for a Korean family. She has learned to make these chilies. Mm. And what we've done is, because they eat the anchovies, we eat charales. And what we did is prepare the chilies Korean style. We order our back home charales, and then we eat it on a tortilla and we freeze it. That way we keep it for longer days, because it was a huge box of chilies that a community that they got. So I was wondering, well, how are they going to eat it? Because we don't get to pick what food they're going to get, right? So I was worried that it was not culturally sensitive to Indigenous communities, but they figured it out. And now they're having these frozen chiles that they prepare with charales that they're giving away amongst their community. Wow. So I was really amazing. She's like, this is keeping us, we make the calabacitas, we freeze it and give it away. Like, then I realized that, wait, they're getting together to cook, package, freeze, and give away. So for me, that's really exciting. There's resilience there too, right? Like,
yes, there's resourcefulness, resilience. And, you know, and unlike some popular opinions that people try to spread the idea that immigrants are here consuming resources. These people don't qualify for any government, help. So what they're getting is from each other and in the community. And actually, it would be something that someone else would, like you said, wouldn't know what to do with. And here they are multiplying it amongst their community. So it's just really, it gives me hope to see kind of like the loaves and fishes multiplying amongst the people. But it really has a lot to do with what you guys are doing. So I commend you so much for all the hard work that you're doing. It's Saturday. I see you guys are working today. You guys are excited about El Grito. And is there anything else that you'd like to share with our listeners today?
Well, just that you mentioned, like, people think that we're here for the resources, right? That we're here for an American dream. And we say there's no American dream. This is just a basic human right to be able to live, where people could have access to a house, to education for their children. But also people have to remember that it wasn't a choice to come here. We were pushed out by the US and Canada policy. Just to end this conversation, in my state, the state of Oaxaca, 427 mining concessions were given to the US and Canadian companies.
Wow.
That's in 400 pueblos. You know what's going to happen? Those 400 pueblos are going to live. Where are they going to come? They're going to come here. Because we have poisoned their water, we have poisoned their land, we have poisoned all their natural resources, right? And so I think that's very important for people to know that the U.S. policy has an impact on indigenous communities that pushes us out, that we have to end up here when we're not wanted.
Exactly.
But if you were to go and see where we come from, it looks like the places where rich people live in the U.S., where there's like water, there's trees, there's rivers, right? So that's where we're forced to, where we're being pushed out to come and live on buildings. I mean, mm-hmm. The air here in LA right now is awful. Mm-hmm. The air back home is very nice.
Yeah, no one wants to leave that lush green, you know, beautiful, but being pushed out is always by colonization, basically. Being pushed out and trying to find a better life to survive. I think it's really important for people to educate themselves and get more information before they have these opinions out loud. Especially social media can be such a cutting place for people to do that. But I'm glad we're using it today, and we'll use it, you know, in the next few days to talk about the Teletón and talk about Cielo. I think we can always turn it around. Just like they did with those chiles, we'll turn it around.
We'll turn it around.
Yes, 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 yes.
So, muchísimas gracias a las dos for being here with me. I'm so honored to speak to you and to know about your work. And we'll certainly be in touch. I'll be certainly be watching on the 15th.
All right. All right. See you on the 15th.
Mi madre llorando niña cuando supo que yo amaba ve a mi madre llorar un día cuando supo que yo amaba que entre quien le diría que eras tú a quien yo adoraba después que lo supo todo la vi llorar de alegría, después que lo supo todo, la vi llorar de alegría. Petanera, petanera, petanera desde mi cuna, mi madre me dijo a solas que amaran